John can't hear me anymore because he has taken his headphones off and he has run off to go to the toilet, even though I said, let's start recording our audio. So we're both now recording audio, but he has decided this is the prime opportunity to use the bathroom. And let me tell you now, kids, that was not a good time to go, because now I'm sat here in my freezing cold room talking to no one while he runs off and lives his life. Poor little me, I'm sat here by myself. A podcast for one. This is no longer the friendship quest, because there is no friendship to be had here. And what brings me joy right now is knowing that he doesn't know anything that I'm saying right now, and he will only hear this back when I put the podcast out. And I'm just going to keep talking until he comes back. And that will be a true test of how long it takes him to pee. So we'll see, because I am running out of things to say, but I'ma keep talking until I see that door open on Zoom, because that's right, we're still recording on Zoom, but we'll talk to you about that in a bit. How's everybody's day? How are we all hanging? Why am I still sat here by myself? Oh, look who's here. We'll see what he's got to say. John!
Hello.
I've started the podcast.
Did you?
Yes.
Is it actually started?
Yeah, it's going. Welcome,
how long has it
John.
Been, how long have we been going for?
I don't know.
Okay, hello.
Hello.
The podcast. I had this a really good idea while I was on the toilet.
Okay, good. What was it?
I want to do like a live episode at some point. We'd need like a substantial following so we could guarantee enough concurrent viewers to participate, but it'd be cool to have like a...
I'm not sure that's a good idea.
It'd be like one of your live streams. No?
Yeah. Except,
I don't appreciate you starting the podcast without my consent.
I don't appreciate you going to the toilet once we've started recording. So hey ho, we both lose. Right.
Hey ho.
This is the Friendship Quest.
The Friendship Quest with John and Katie.
Yes. And before we get going into today's episode, we're going to have a look through some of the things you've sent in to us, have a little chat with you. So John, what's first on our agenda?
Well, first on our agenda, we have some emails. We have an email from our friend Sarah, who, if you can remember back, I think she emailed us like 2 episodes ago.
Yeah, it's something like that.
Why I don't salt my pasta water, and we addressed it in episode 3. And she just commented that I answered the question incorrectly, which I don't know how I was supposed to answer correctly, since it was an opinion, but, you know, whatever. And then, because we went off about saying c'est la vie, but in German, because I thought it was funny, because c'est la vie is French, she said that there is a phrase that translates to c'est la vie in German, which is das ist das Leben. People don't really say it, but it exists.
So
thank you very much, Sarah.
Thank you, Sarah. That answers our question about that.
Who'd have thought we'd be answering questions on this podcast?
Whoa. It's almost like that was the intended purpose. Okay.
How far we deviated.
The next thing, I have a TikTok comment about our last podcast, which was what was 2020? Because we are now in 2021. Isn't that wild, John?
No.
Okay. Well, this person, not very happy about 2020, they've commented, 2020 was hell, there, and then in brackets. Other than Sonic movie, my amazing treats I got on my birthday, and my July holiday to Turkey. That was chronological order, by the way. Quite light.
That fit the theme of the episode, so that's good.
Yeah. So there you go. That was that person's opinion on 2020.
I never saw the Sonic movie, but I kind of want to see
it. I never saw the Sonic movie.
Probably something to do with the fact that cinemas closed pretty quick.
That is true, but also I'm not like that into Sonic in the first place, and there was just too much going on with that movie, like everything that was happening before it was even released. It's a whole thing I don't want to enter.
Fair play. All right, and last up on our agenda of business, we have a question from Aaron, who emailed in as well to ask us a question about our last podcast, because we mentioned that we spent a lot of time watching anime together in lockdown, mm-hmm. remotely. And he asked, what anime were we watching together and which ones are our favourites. No spoilers, just in case, so we won't spoil any major plot points. So we were mainly were watching Black Clover, I think.
Yes, that is what we were watching at the time.
Which I was rewatching, and I got you into.
Yes.
So we were catching up to date.
I mean, we started off the lockdown watching Fairy Tail.
Yeah, we started watching Fairy Tail with another housemate of ours, who then, as we all went our separate ways, it became very difficult to coordinate three people in different places watching something at the same time.
He abandoned us for his better life in Portugal, so...
Which is under a less strict lockdown, so he was having way more fun.
Yeah, so then we moved on to a different anime, which was Black Clover. And now we're on a completely different one for this lockdown.
Yeah, we're watching Jujutsu Kaisen, which is a newish anime, which is pretty cool. Check it out on Crunchyroll.com. Can you imagine if Crunchyroll sponsored an episode of The Friendship Quest?
I swear, each episode we're like, wow, wouldn't it be funny if they sponsored us? They're not going to, John.
Listen, I've listened to a lot of podcasts. You have to keep making sponsorship jokes until someone sponsors you. That's how the game goes. It's our path to success.
So thank you for getting in touch. You can get in touch with us at thefriendshipquest@gmail.com or on my TikTok, which is KHP Theatre. What is our question for today, John?
Our question, which segues nicely from talking about some animes we've watched, is in fact, what makes a great story or a good story? Which I think it's a good question. It sort of relates to... Everything we enjoy in life has a story to it.
I think it's a very difficult question that we've set ourselves there. What makes a good story? Because I don't know.
We're not literature students. We couldn't dive into the academics of it, perhaps. But
no, but I did do a drama degree, and a lot of what we did was analysing plays and all that stuff. Not necessarily for the story. It was more... boring like context and stuff like that. Nobody cares about that stuff, so we didn't do that much on story, but it's obviously an important part of what I've done in the theatre world and a huge part of what I do on TikTok.
Definitely, because you analyse and review films, so important. I think you've got a better foothold on this than I do necessarily. But
your physics degree hasn't helped you with this then, John?
No, not particularly. There isn't a story to analyse there, unfortunately. Where should we start?
I think we should start with, what does Google suggest a good story is?
What is a good story?
I've searched, and the first thing that comes up is from American Press Institute. There you go. A good story is about something the audience decides is interesting or important. A great story often does both by using storytelling to make important news interesting.
Ooh, that's quite a good quote. However, it's not very helpful to say that the audience decides, because we're the audience and we're trying to decide.
It's very important, because let's be real, like... For example, I'm going to talk about Disney a lot here because I feel like it's just where my sort of base point is.
It's good branding.
I don't like the Cars movies, for example, right? Because I don't like the story. I really don't. They're very action-y based, not necessarily in the way that I like action, but there's like a lot of action going on, and that's sort of more what it's about. It's about like, will this car race again, because we want to see him race. And so people really like Cars if they like that sort of thing, whereas I don't. I like more emotion and character based stories.
I think you're not wrong in saying the characters in Cars were not the best developed.
Yeah, but some people don't care about that as much. So what makes a good story does entirely depend on your audience and what they think a good story is. So
ultimately, it's an artistic thing, isn't it? Where it's up to your interpretation. However, more often than not, you can categorically say if something has a good story.
You'd like to think so.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that that's really the case. But...
You might not like it, but I think there's some things we can hopefully come to agree on as to what is
actually... For example, some people defend the Chicken Little movie, and that's not something I can stand by. You can defend Cars, okay? Oh. But Chicken Little, I have to put my foot down.
Yeah, that's not a good story. Not that I've seen it for a long time. Well, when I think of constructing a story, I'm brought back to primary school English lessons. And we were always taught that there were five elements to a story. And after a quick Google search, it appears that some people suggest there are actually seven or six or...
Well, because I hate that.
Yeah.
I hate that. Like, no, you can't do that. That's not how a story works. Whatever. Please continue.
Well, the five that I... When I think of it, I always think of... You start with your introduction.
Yeah.
Your beginning, right? You set the scene, the characters, all that. There's the rising action... The climax of the story, the pit where all the exciting stuff happens, and then the sort of like the resolution to that and the ending.
Yes. That is the typical structure of most theatrical pieces.
Yeah, and sometimes it was described as like a mountain or a hill that you sort of climb up and go down.
Yeah.
And in my mind, that was always very unhelpful because... It sort of laid it out that each section should be an equal length. Like, the climax should be exactly in the middle, and then the rest of the story is, like, resolution.
Oh, but that would be so boring.
I know.
Do you know what I can't stand? Is when I'm watching a movie, and the climax happens, and then, like, there's another, like, 30 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, I think...
What is going to happen?
There's a lot of movies where yeah, the pacing is a problem if... You're bored for the second half of the movie.
Yeah. But also, the thing with the mountain way of writing a story, for people like me who have studied a lot of theatre and watched a lot of art, you get bored. And a lot of movies and TV shows follow that theme, sure. But I've spent a lot of my education looking for more experimental things. And when a movie really just rips that apart, it excites me. So almost for me, a better story is one that completely ignores that structure, because I will actually become interested, like, oh, this suddenly is telling me it's not where I'm expecting it to go, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, I've got 10 elements in front of me.
Oh, that's a lot of elements.
I think we should go through and decide what we think about them. So number one says, I mean, they're very vague, so we should get through this quite quickly. Number one says, make the dramatic content of your story strong. So it's basically saying you need good dramatic content in there.
I suppose. Does every story have to be dramatic?
Yeah, this is what I was going to say. I'm going to argue against that. Because I would actually sit and watch a movie that is like, on the face of it, really boring. Like, there's not really anything dramatic. It's more like this, maybe just someone like is walking about. But if it's done really well and done really interesting, like, that's the sort of thing that would excite me, because I'd be like, whoa. Like,
so what's interesting then if it's not dramatic?
I don't know. I'm just someone who likes to sit and observe. Yeah, so I don't know, it's hard to explain, but I don't need that dramatic content for a good story. I don't. I think stories that follow the generic, you have to have these things in it for it to be a good story, are the ones that when you start breaking them down, like I automatically do, are boring, because you're used to that, like, oh, here's the same old thing. Whereas something that maybe on the face of it is like, oh, well, that probably won't be a good story. If it's interesting and unique in what it does, that will interest someone like me. But I'm not the average person, because I've spent so long analysing all that sort of stuff.
Above,
I'm not the
average
watcher. What? No, I'm not. I'm just saying I'm not your standard movie watcher.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. And I think anyone who's spent a long time studying things will have a different perspective from the general audience. All right, what's the next element?
Right, point number two, oh my god, says vary your prose's rhythm and structure. So basically, don't just use the same, like, sentence structure every all the time.
So this is more general advice for writing a story, but not actually elements of a story.
Yeah, so that's more about, like, just don't write the same sentence over and over again. But to be fair, I'm laughing because I think, well, obviously, but there's definitely dodgy writing out there that
I suppose like that translates to dialogue in a film or something like that.
Okay, so number three is create believable, memorable characters. That's also interesting.
I'd agree with that, I think. What are you going to say?
I'm pulling a face because the word believable there for me is really interesting.
Believable, it depends what you mean. Because if you're grounding your story in the real world, then the characters ought to be believable.
Absolutely.
If you're writing a fantasy story, then you don't necessarily want realistic characters in the same way. It depends what you're doing. Obviously, you can have a great amount of metaphor and allegory in your fantasy world.
Believable doesn't mean like, oh, it is possible in the real world. It just means that the character does things that you agree, like, you're like, yes, that is something that the character would do. Like,
the actions and thoughts make sense.
That is not the only form of art, and it gets to me a little bit that like this is very much a list of things for like naturalistic theatre. So theatre, like capturing the real world.
Yes.
And even fantasy still comes into that because still like how people behave and things like that, even if it is in the fantasy world. But if you properly get into theatre and like weird things that practitioners have gone off and done, believable characters, no, they don't want that. But I do kind of agree with memorable. Like,
I think that's,
you want to remember who the characters were.
Yeah, I was trying to think of a good adjective for what your character should be, and memorable certainly is one, because no matter what, I don't think a forgettable character is ever a good thing in a story.
Mm.
Like, you want them to be there with a purpose, and you want your audience to remember that, perhaps.
Can you think of any characters that are, like, your favourites?
Getting to favourites now. My favourite characters...
I'm asking you, but I don't have an answer myself, so please don't ask me.
This is what I was scared of, that we were going to get into a cycle of saying, what's your favourite show? What's your favourite movie? Who's your favourite character? I don't have, off the top of my head, a favourite character, I'm afraid.
No, but just one that, like, pops into your head as, like, that was a good character.
I'm not sure if I like many characters in, like, mainstream things.
Oh, interesting.
You know what? I'm just going to say that. I can't think of any good, like, characters that I really... I don't have favourite characters.
I have two Disney examples. I have more examples from books, I think. I tend to form, like, better attachments to characters in books, but then that's going off. I'm not sure people would know the books that I've read necessarily. But back to Disney movies. I was thinking of one of my absolute favourite characters is Jim Hawkins from Treasure Planet, which is possibly one because I probably had a crush on him when I was a child. But moving past that, I also think he's a phenomenal character. I think he's incredibly well written. And... just, I think the way he's written to display so many emotions, you know, I don't want to see a character that's just like sad all the time, except for sadness in Inside Out, but that's a different, that doesn't count.
That's
her purpose. But like, or just happy all the time, except for Joy in Inside Out, that's different.
All right, we don't need to like add a Inside Out exception clause after every sentence. Okay.
But I don't, there's just something about him where he's very real, very real. And I think that's hard to achieve in animation, especially in Disney animation, because they always try to create these characters that are really like virtuous. So when a character isn't like that and he's just like a normal person but in these really extreme situations, I think that's a really well-written character. But another character I came up with is Wally. Wally's a phenomenal character and I'll hear nothing else about it. That is such a good movie. Oh my God. That is, to be fair, that is one of the movies that I think slightly switches up the generic outline of a story.
Definitely.
Mainly because it's two main characters don't really talk.
There's no there's no necessary dialogue in a traditional sense, and it's a very, it's sort of the environment and the world they're in plays as much of a role as the characters do, if that makes
as
sense.
As does like the sound.
Yeah.
I'm very into sound. If you find, there's a video about the sound design for Wally, and it's so interesting because it entirely builds the character and the story, and I think it's a side of cinema that's often forgotten about. But that movie literally wouldn't be possible without that sound designer, so go check out that video. But I think that's a great example of a character being written in a way that's very memorable, but very different at the same time. So there you go. Point four is boring. It just says make the important parts of your story effective.
Doesn't mean anything. Okay.
Cool. Don't know what... Deepen your plot with subplots.
Yeah, I guess that's important to an extent.
I mean, you want stuff going on, but also there are so many movies that have just so many subplots, and it's like, what? Where are we? What's happening? Yeah.
You need a good balance to sort of thicken the story, but not make it too confusing.
Do you know what? I think you've used a very good word there, John. Balance. I think just for everything, when it comes to stories, you need a balance.
Definitely.
Whatever that might be, you can't throw things like too much one way. It just doesn't work. I don't think.
I think even in non-traditional stories like you were talking about, you break tradition in one sense, but it's usually balanced by something in another direction, if that makes sense. I can't think of a specific example.
Point six really interests me. It says,
okay,
make every line of dialogue count.
I agree to some extent.
I do, I think.
I think there are a lot of examples of breakdowns of bad movies and bad scenes where it feels like the characters are talking and like nothing is actually progressing. It doesn't mean anything. And it just feels like it's there to, you know, fill out the time.
Yeah, and I think when it says, like, make every line count, that doesn't necessarily mean you can't have lines which are just, like, okay. Like, it doesn't mean, like, every line has to be pivotal to the plot.
Doesn't have to be a great speech.
If it's just a scene to have a scene there, get it out. Yeah. Get rid of it.
Yeah, even if you're just sort of establishing the content of your characters or... you know, how they interact with one another with a mundane conversation, that can be very effective sometimes, especially in making the audience actually care about the characters.
Okay. This, I'm a little bit confused by point seven, but I think it's just talking about building the environment that the story's in. So just not ignoring that. It says make place a character, which is really interesting. So the fact that, like, the environment is also important and that it shifts and changes and all sorts like that. That's very technical, I feel, though.
Yeah, and it depends on the situation again. But yeah, obviously setting and stuff is very important.
Environment's always very important, and that's why we have things like set designers in the theatre. Like, you need a person for that. They have to be able to do that.
Yeah,
so that's absolutely crucial to the story. Number eight, create conflict and tension. Which, again, I think is one of those points where, yes, generally... standard ideas, there will be some sort of conflict and there will be some sort of tension in the story. I think you'll find plenty of examples in more experimental things where that's not the case, but I think in general sort of theatre and movies and stuff like that, that you need that in there for it to not be boring.
Yeah, definitely.
The idea of stakes as well, like, what's a good example of a movie where if you just sit there and they do have a conflict in it, but you just sit there and go, ooh, but I don't care. Then it's like, that's not going to work, is it? Yeah,
definitely. You need stakes. You need it to feel like the character's decisions have weight. Otherwise, there's no point in telling this part of the story.
Yeah. And you know, I've come up with an example. Finding Dory.
Oh, there you
go. Slightly controversial, I think. But the fact is, every 5 minutes, those fish got lost again.
Mm.
So it got to, like... halfway through the movie and they found each other again. And I was like, oh, cute, right? That's the end. No, because they got lost again. And then later on in the movie, they also got lost again.
Yeah.
So every time they found each other and then got lost, I was like, oh, God, we're just still going. That's not interesting. Yes, you have conflict, but the tension ain't there.
But yes, I can imagine that is a movie. A lot of sequels based off other more successful films probably have much lower stakes because obviously the big development would have probably happened in the first film. And then you're sort of like either engineering a very similar situation or, you know, a slightly lesser situation, which ultimately just feels less satisfying. And it feels like, they, you know, they're trying to make money. Obviously, that's not the case with all sequels, but...
No, and then that's why it's so shocking that when the sequel is, like, better, you're like, whoa!
Yeah,
oh my God, that was a good movie, not just a rip-off of the first one, Right, point number nine, and you're going to need to help me here, John, because I don't know what this word means.
Oh, dear.
Craft beguiling beginnings.
Ooh, beguiling.
Yeah, I know the word, but I couldn't define it for you. Well, do you have a definition?
I'm going to look up a definition because...
Please do.
I don't want to get this wrong. So it is... Oh, there's two. There's a few definitions, but yeah, it's to charm or enchant, often in a deceptive way, or in a literary term can be to help pass time pleasantly.
Okay.
I think it probably means like a combination of the two, but it's more to do with like, you know, you want to entice people. You
pulling
wanna,
you in.
You want to hook people on your story.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely true.
I do think that's really important.
Yes.
And I do think that's that can be a real sticking point for a lot of stories, is that they think, right, we've got the high point of the movie is solid. And then, like, the ending after that, it goes great. Like, everything comes together and then it ends beautifully. But then the beginning is a bit naff.
Yeah, absolutely. I think people think that the climax and the ending are almost, like, the most important parts. And I wonder if that's how beginnings get neglected more often than not. Which would be a shame because, yeah, absolutely. Enticing someone. I mean, if someone's bored in the first, you know, half an hour of a film, they're probably not going to watch the rest of it.
Yeah.
So you really do need to get, hook people on the premise is important.
And the last point on this list is basically have a good ending.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. But, I mean, what it actually says is deliver a knockout ending, which I always want something where the ending isn't what I expect. Now, as someone who watches a lot of Disney movies, because that's all I do on TikTok, the ending is quite often what I expect.
Yeah.
Because it's Disney. Like, I'm not expecting anything else from it. Disney is mainly for a younger audience. It follows a generic sort of style, and it's likely to end where you expect it to. When things don't do that, it just brings me so much joy. When I can watch something and it just does something near the end, I'm like, ah, I wasn't actually expecting that. It just makes me so happy.
I think this goes back to the point, well, I was about to say from the last point, you want an enticing beginning. And often you do that by like introducing a lot of different themes, or you bring up like things that you hope will get resolved later. And a good ending will, you know, resolve all of the points, tie up all the loose ends.
I don't know, though. I kind of like it sometimes when they just don't, when they're just like, we're not even going to talk about that. And I'm like,
that's also effective. But I think
in a lazy way.
You have to be careful with that, because then that's almost like introducing pointless scenes and dialogue and stuff, potentially.
Yeah, it needs to hold some sort of weight. But kind of like Inception.
Yes. So that leaves
when they don't answer all the questions.
It has an ambiguous sort of ending, which is good. Yeah. We like that.
Yeah. The ending to Inception is so good.
Spicy.
If you actually understand what's going on in the movie at any point.
I need to watch that film again, to be fair.
Yeah, same. Maybe on the fourth time watching it, I'll actually
understand it a bit better. Yeah. And I think that also links into the subplot idea as well. Because if you've got like a lot of subplots, then... theoretically, it shouldn't matter how many there are, so long as at any point along the story your audience knows where they are, And at the end of it, it, you know, resolves or doesn't resolve all of them, but in, you know, a good way.
Yeah. Do you know what I really like? This is going to sound strange.
What do you really, like, Katie?
I really like it when a character just dies.
Yes. Agreed.
Because do you know what we don't do enough anymore in writing of any stories? Just kill off the main character.
Just kill the main character.
That
do
just
it, you
doesn't
cowards.
Happen. Like, just kill them. Let it end. It's so. It's just so much more. That going back to stakes.
Mm.
Like, that's properly, like, everything matters. Because
yes.
You're proving that, like, someone can actually die in this story and they won't just magically come back.
Yeah, that's a big problem with, like, it's not such a big problem in films, but, well, obviously, characters don't die enough, clearly, in any media. But in, like, long, ongoing TV programs, you just absolutely know the main character definitely isn't going to die in the middle of a season or until maybe on the very final episode.
And you know what? I think that's why Game of Thrones possibly did so well as well, because they just didn't care about that. Although then that's the books really mainly, isn't it?
Yeah.
Rather than the TV show. But the TV show just helped in the fact that, like, it's an easier medium for more people. So that's why that became popular. But the books are just so ruthless. Like, you have no idea what's going to happen on the next page, because literally anything could happen.
Yeah. And certainly there are stories like that. And it certainly helps to build a big world with many, many characters. Obviously, it becomes very difficult to sort of keep your audience going along through a story with so many different storylines, like we've said. But then it does open you up to lots of options where you have all these possible interactions and, yeah, many, many character deaths.
Yeah, and I just think with TV shows in particular, when they kill off a character, like a popular character, and then, like, they come back.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you cowards.
Yeah, that
and,
feels
like,
lazy.
And, like, I get it, because yeah. I watch things where I get very attached to a character, and if they killed off that character, I would be upset. And I'd be like, I'm never watching it again. I get it. But at the same time, just do it, you cowards.
Cowards.
Because they just don't want to lose their audience, and that annoys me, because then your TV show isn't about the story you want to write, it's the story that you think people want to hear, and I'm not interested in that.
Or it's less artistic in a way, it's more money grabbing to you know, appease the audience. But yeah, it's a difficult balance as well.
That and laziness in story writing really get to me. I talk about it a lot when I'm watching movies. If anything's lazy, and I can never, I'm not really good at explaining what that looks like to me, but if they just do something for the sake of doing it because they just need to do, like, oh, we'll just do that because that's so much easier.
Absolutely.
Or it gets to me.
Yeah.
And the movie can be good overall, but if you do anything in it that makes me think you've just gone, oh, that would be so, let's just do that, and it actually doesn't mean anything for it,
yeah.
I now dislike your movie, and I'm sorry, but that's just how it has to be.
Well, yeah, that also takes the form of, you've had your big climax and your big resolution, you're not sure how to wrap it up, and I guess the ultimate form of laziness, which you don't see so much these days, but was the cliche of it was all a dream, or because that was, like, original once with, like, Alice in Wonderland or whatever, I think was the first example of that. Probably not the first example, but, you know,
the first popular
example that I can think of. And then anything after that that sort of did the same twist.
But I mean, it was all a dream. As, like, a cliche, doesn't actually bother me that much, if it works. And, I mean, am I allowed to... That movie's very, like, old now.
What movie are you
talking
about?
To spoil it? Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 2. Am I allowed to spoil... Spoilers for Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 2, everybody.
Skip ahead two minutes if you don't want to hear the spoilers.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a big fan of the Twilight franchise, but I happened to go see that in the cinema. And when the twist happened in that, when it was like, oh, actually, that whole, like, fight that happened wasn't real, the whole cinema gasped. We were all shook. Like, it was one of the craziest moments that I've had in a cinema, because nobody knew it was coming and it happened and we were like, oh my God. And I didn't mind that. That's not necessarily what I mean by laziness.
Well, thank you for ruining a film I was very much looking forward to watching. Twilight Breaking Dawn Part
John's
2.
John's favourite movie.
That I have yet to see. have you heard of The Hero's Journey? Have you ever studied The Hero's Journey?
No, don't think so.
I thought you might have done, but maybe not. It's like a cycle of steps that your protagonist goes through that was sort of talked about a lot in the 20th century as sort of like the basis of every story. And you see it crop up in almost anything that has, you know, a main protagonist. And it's about like how to make their development satisfying. And it occurred to me when we were talking about elements of a story, and it's quite a good, interesting thing to sort of break down. And if you go through the steps, you sort of see absolutely this is like 100% what happens in a lot of things. So it's a cycle of, it's like a cycle. You're supposed to return to where you started, but you start with your hero. And initially you have a call to adventure. I don't know. Anything. Let's take a movie. Let's take Treasure Planet or Treasure Island, but Treasure Planet. What's Jim's call to adventure?
He gets the map.
He finds the map.
And then he's like, I must go.
Yeah.
Because he wants to save his mum's inn.
There you go.
I feel like I'm being quizzed.
I'm quizzing you
like, on my knowledge of Treasure Planet.
Usually
which
there's
is strong,
like,
so don't test me.
Yeah, okay, all right. Sometimes there's a refusal of the call, which is interesting. So, like, it'll be, if your character's thrust into, like, a situation, they initially sort of reject it, and then they're sort of forced you know, action.
I feel like that's common in, like, superhero-type things, when they're like, this is your duty, and it's like, but I didn't ask for this, that kind of thing.
And then their wife burns down.
Their wife burns down,
and it's like, I have to go now.
That's not the phrase I would use, I got to say. Their wife isn't a house. It's just such a weird way to describe it. Please continue.
I just thought it was funny. The next step is supernatural aid, which can either... It doesn't have to actually be supernatural, but it's something that gives them an edge, right? It can either be, like, interference from a literal god, or it's a... It's usually associated with, like, a mentor. Like, often you'll have a mentor, and they'll either present them with, like, an item or an artifact, or it doesn't have to be a physical thing, but they give them something that, you know, propels them forward, basically. And using that, the next step is crossing the first threshold, which is where they sort of go into the field. It's the first sort of test of their abilities, effectively. And sort of that's how you see their development. And then you can sort of skip a lot of the in-between bits, a lot of the conflict in the middle, up until the climax, if that makes sense. Right. But you often see their first encounter with the danger.
Yeah.
The next step is called Belly of the Whale, which I'm not actually sure what that means. So it gets a bit weird with this. It's like they're sort of like
they get swallowed by a whale.
I don't think there's a there
in
might be a whale.
Every movie.
Yeah, you know that bit with the whale in every superhero movie? I love that bit. It's the start of their metamorphosis as a character. The belly of the whale represents the final separation from the hero's known world and self. That's you crossing into what they call the underworld. You have the overworld, which is like everything the hero knows, and then he crosses over, or she crosses over into the underworld, where quick save there, where you know that's the world they're thrust into for this adventure, where the danger is. Then there's like trial. So I think you can break it down further into the next bit is like the trial and the quest. So that's like sort of progressing the story. Death is an important part. Not necessarily the character's literal death, but there is death involved. There has to be death. There's always death in the hero's
journey. There isn't, but okay.
uh, and then Resurrection and Rebirth. So it's sort of like...
You cowards!
This is what we want. It doesn't have to be... Basically, at the lowest point, they die, and then they come back to life. And it's not necessarily a literal death, but it's they get knocked down,
they're
right?
They're defeated. And then they rise
and
from the
And then they
ashes.
Rise from that challenge. They atoned them.
Like a
they,
phoenix.
They there's transformation, atonement, so they right their wrong.
Okay.
And then they return.
Right.
To the beginning of the story. Like, there's a, you know.
Yeah, yeah, cyclical
there's
nature.
There's a cyclical nature to it.
I'm not sure for me that would necessarily be like, that's a good story.
I think it is a way to make a good, satisfying story. I mean, I'm just thinking of all the animes we've watched. Certainly almost any development of a protagonist, they would go through these sorts of steps.
Yeah.
I mean, even every episode where there's a fight in the middle, you know, you go through this. The hero comes up, a new thing is encountered, they get defeated, they realise something, they reform themselves, and then they win, you know.
Yeah.
That's the satisfying sort of layout
every
of
time.
A story. Every time.
But then...
And then you defy
it gets
expectations.
More exciting. It gets more exciting when that doesn't happen. It's like, whoa, it's changed.
Yeah, and that it's more exciting when sometimes there isn't the rebirth. When they get knocked down and they don't get back up again. Yeah.
I feel like we've been very informative today. I don't feel like we're normally this informative.
No, I feel quite academic and not as funny.
Oh, I'm sorry, John. You were never funny. Oh.
So this episode of The Friendship Quest was brought to you by Crunchyroll.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. Don't listen to him.
Can we get sued if we give a false... advert?
No, it's free advertising for them. What are you talking about?
I guess we could be sued for defamation if we said some really like bad things that weren't true.
Well, yeah, but we're not.
Are you challenging me?
I'm really not.
Ah, good times. What's your favorite story?
Why, like, literally why?
It's an impossible question, and as soon as you asked me the first time what my favourite character was, I completely forgot every character I've ever known.
I feel like I can tell you what my favourite book is.
What's your favourite book?
The Knife of Never Letting Go.
That is a good book.
By Patrick Ness. It's right next to me. I can see it. One of my favourite plays is Macbeth, because I'm that like, boring. But that's a good play.
It is a good play. I studied that.
I love Macbeth. One of my favourite TV shows. Oh, I don't know about that. I've started that sentence. I'm not sure I can finish it. No, I can't finish that sentence.
One of my favourite movies is Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Really?
Yeah. Why do you sound surprised?
Just because I don't think that's like what I would... Like, when people talk about their favourite movies, that's not what I would expect a lot of people to say. Like, it's a good movie.
Absolutely.
But I think because it's so, like, comical and jokey and not really, like, being very serious about, like, the genre it's in.
It's almost a parody
I think people... people enjoy it as, like, this is a good movie, but then they don't really sort of respect it. Does that make
sense? Yeah, I get what you mean. I mean, I'm a fan of other movies that make me feel much more serious emotions, I guess. But, you know.
Yeah, I'm a very, like, emotion-driven person. Mm. Like, my favourite movie is going to be a movie that makes me cry, probably.
Oh, I see.
So I feel like where we've got to, which is a little bit upsetting in a way, is exactly where we were at the start, which is just that it's,
we've gone
it's
through
entire...
the whole journey.
It's cyclical. There you go. It's a cycle. It's a circle.
Absolutely.
Whatever. Back to the fact that it's completely, like, dependent on what you want from the story.
Yeah. I think characters are more important than plot for me.
But to me, characters and plot is what makes the story. No? You can't have a story without the characters in it.
That's true.
Well,
obviously...
I do think... don't hold me to that, because I'm sure there are plenty of experimental things without characters. I've done a theatre show. I created a mini theatre show with a friend before that was lighting. That was it. There weren't any characters.
There you go.
The whole show was lighting. So there you go. Experimental theatre for you all there. But I do, like, generically, characters and plot is what makes up the story.
Every time you say characters and plot, I just think you're launching into your TikTok intro.
Characters, plot, acting, or voice acting and songs. Somebody put in a TikTok comment, they were like, when did you get bored of saying the intro? And I was like, I got bored after the fourth episode. Like, I don't want to say it anymore. But I do keep thinking, should I change it up? But I also think I'd lose all of my followers.
Yeah, you've got your
so
branding. You can't give that up.
But it just takes up so much time. I have to say it so quickly.
It's funny.
That's a solid, like, 10 seconds of a 60-second video.
Oh. No, I know what you're saying about, obviously, characters and plot are parts of the story, but I'd much rather see, like, something devoid of plot with characters I love.
Oh, absolutely.
Than, you know, a story happening with characters I don't care about.
A really good plot with characters who are awful is just not good.
Yeah. Whereas it sort of works if you love the characters.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I feel like that wraps up our thoughts on what makes a good story.
Let us know what your favourite stories are and what you think makes a good story by emailing us at thefriendshipquest@gmail.com.
Yes, and you can find this podcast on Spotify, where you can now search the name of the podcast and we actually come up. So thank you all for
that. Thank you for listening on Spotify.
And you can also check us out on Apple Podcasts, where you could leave a review. That would be really appreciated. We were on SoundCloud, but we've run out of free storage space. So we will be moving. But we will discuss that.
And all the links will be in the usual places, and we'll put the new home of the podcast, wherever that may be, in the description of the other previous homes.
Yeah. I mean, there's no point in us saying it in this episode, because if you found this episode...
Congratulations.
Congratulations. Yeah. But that's it from us, I think.
Thank you very much for listening. And remember, keep... storying.
What does that mean?
They know what it means.
They know what it means. Okay, sure.